You're listening to Campfire Conversations, brought to you by Three Rivers Land Trust. Connected to the land, committed to conservation.
What's going on, everybody? Matthew Williams with Three Rivers Land Trust, back in the Backcountry and Beyond podcast studio with Three Rivers Land Trust. I'm joined today here in the studio by Katie Stovall. You want to say hey, Katie?
Hello, everyone.
Good to be back in the studio. It's been a little bit. We just got back in from all the holidays, and Katie and myself have both been plagued with the flu and the COVID, and we finally got over that and getting to feel a little better. I know I'm feeling a little better. How about you?
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be probably coughing and hacking a little bit throughout this, but we were out putting in fire breaks, I guess, 2 weeks ago now, and Matt texts me. He's like, I'm down. I can't meet you out there. I'm sick. Can't get off the couch. And I was like, man, that sucker. And then about a week later, same thing happened to me.
So. Yeah, she thought I was just laying out because I wanted to lay out for Christmas. And I felt miserable. I think I was on the couch, or I stayed in bed for probably 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
Like, just ached all over. Had a fever of like 103. It was miserable.
Yeah, I knew you weren't messing. I can't remember what we even talked about, but we talked on the phone one time, and it just sounded like you were holding your nose, you know?
Well, I feel all right, but, you know.
That's exactly what you sounded like. So, but, I mean, we're both on the mend now. So
Back in action.
So, we missed – I know I missed my family's Christmas, both sides of the family,
mm-hmm.
being out sick. You did
– I missed both my family's Christmas, too.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like Christmas, just, I guess, because that – you know, it's just crazy, like, you don't – I feel like a lot of people, yeah, I know I have before, you just take that for granted. But when all that's taken away from you, it kind of makes you realize how much it really plays into the feeling of Christmas and what Christmas actually is, you know?
Yeah, so this podcast might not be the most timely, or maybe it is. But what we're going to be talking about today, you know, Matt and myself, we're both, I guess, big into habitat management. It's what we enjoy. It's what we love doing. And it's what we think about all the time. So...
Mm-hmm.
The topic for today's podcast is if we were to craft a Christmas list and said, hey, Santa, this is what you're going to bring me. These are going to be the top 8 things that would be on our list.
To do habitat management.
Yeah, that's right. So regardless of the species, just kind of an overarching comprehensive list of things to be able to get you by. But there are differences in both of our list in that... And I guess this will show you a little bit about our personalities, too. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But
gonna make my personality look highfalutin.
Well, any of you that know Matthew know he's very, very highfalutin. Has to have the best of the best. Right? No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, if you ain't the best, you can at least look the best.
There you go.
Look then, like what you know what you're doing.
And then me over here being the ragtag, you know.
Penny pinching, working to death kind of person Katie is, if y'all have ever met Katie.
Yep. So my list is going to come in... just below $1,000, and then what's yours total to a hunt? Hang on, let me take a guess. 370,000.
No, it ain't that bad.
Okay,
but it's still up there. It's like 120,000.
That's it.
I don't know about you, but I ain't got 120 grand laying around.
That's not what I meant. I just figured, knowing some of the things that I thought you were going to put on there, I figured it would be up.
No, I try to be a little conservative. Something you can actually pay off in 30 years.
Yeah. Okay. So, if you are anybody that is interested in habitat management, if you own, what would you say? Maybe.
I would say yours more scaled to like the, I don't know, anywhere from like.
Below 20 acres.
Yeah, definitely below 20 acres. I would say like in the. It's kind of hard to do management on even like the small 1 acre, like anything that falls under, I would say 5 acres is kind of hard to manage for anyway, but it's not saying you can't do things.
Or that you shouldn't.
No, or that not that you shouldn't either. Most definitely not. But there's definitely the big boys that have a lot to do, and then there's the people that can piddle and still make a big impact on their small properties as well.
And I think, you know, that's a mindset that comes over time. You know, myself being a small property owner, we have 13 acres, and we make do with very little sometimes. And mm-hmm. I would still wager to say that we have an extremely profound impact on our little 13 acres. We try to manage it as best we can, And when we moved in, it was nothing but fescue fields and pretty much sweet gum. But now we've transformed it into a lot of early succession. And now in February, I can go out and they're a woodcock out there mating, you know.
No, I mean, like, I've been to Katie's house several times, you know, just hanging out and stuff. And, you know, you pull in, you pull in this long driveway, and it looks like a growed up cutover almost.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you got a dove field there that y'all killed several doves out of it this year, didn't you?
Yeah, we got each of our limits more than one day. So
I mean, on 13 acres, people think you got to have 20, 30 acre field to hunt. And you're here to shoot, how big is y'all's field? Maybe a quarter of an acre, half an acre maybe?
No, it's over an acre. I think it's like 1.7 or something.
Yeah.
But it does have a power line through it. So that is, we ain't gonna talk about that. That is very helpful.
You know, and then you said, the other night you had four or five deer, and you're, like, out there around you?
No, it wasn't the other night. So, I was sick, my husband was sick, and we were laid up on the couch. He was on one couch, I was on another couch, you know, because we can't do anything. We couldn't get off the couch. And I think, like, one of us roll over and look outside, and there are four deer. And this is, I don't know, this is probably 10:30 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just walking out there in broad daylight, and they don't care. You know, you can tell by watching their behavior, they're not worried, they're not, you know.
And it's really saying something down there at your house too, though, because you're still out in a rural area, whereas like me living in kind of a suburban type area where there's just an overpopulation of deer
right.
Down your way are more spread out and actually have other places to go. So saying that there's actually deer there is kind of special, I guess you would say.
I totally agree with that. And it's, you know, it's funny to watch them because, and this is no exaggeration, because I watch them a lot at my house, they can be out there in, so a lot of my yard is not a yard per se, because it's all grown up, but we still do have a little bit, maybe an acre or something that is mowed, just because the way our property is laid out.
Could have more yard, you just desire not to, because right. There's other beneficial things to do what you're goals yeah. are.
And I would like to have even less mowed yard, but I guess that's what I was saying, is just the way my property is laid out, it doesn't make sense. Like, I can't let everything grow up because we have so many accessory structures or whatever you want to call it. We have to be able to access those. So we do have like about an acre that is mowed, but anyways, you can watch the deer, and if they ever pop out into one of the little mowed areas, it's amazing, like no exaggeration, they can step 3 foot back in to the growed up area and you don't see them.
Mm-mm.
Just because this vegetation is, even if their head is standing straight up, the vegetation is exactly that height. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's why they are there so much, in addition to the food and cover, but they feel safe because they know, even us, my husband and I, and we have a dog, a free range dog that's always outside.
You probably see them a lot more for what verboom.
That is true, but still, they still know that, and they can, you know, we can be within 30 yards of them, and we can hear them, but we can't see them.
Mm.
So they're pretty accustomed to that. So I don't know where we're going with that.
But and then, I mean, the other thing, I'm just trying to get at, like, you can have a lot of fun recreation on a small property. Like, 13 acres is not small in today's world, but I mean, like, you shot doves out of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Could have shot deer out of it this year.
Yep.
You said you heard plenty of woodcock, so you could potentially have harvested
absolutely.
Woodcock there. You have wood ducks fly up and down your creek.
All the time.
So, I mean, that's a possibility.
Squirrel, you come to my house. You come to my... So, Matt come to my house on, I don't even know what day it was, Sunday? Saturday?
Yeah, it was Sunday.
And he has a squirrel dog now, and he let his dog out of his truck, and he and I were sitting there talking, and it was like... what, maybe 7 minutes?
Yeah, she just got bored and went and treated a squirrel.
Yeah, and we heard her bark, and I was like, what is she doing? And does she got a squirrel? He's like, oh, yeah, she's found a squirrel. So,
so we went and got to shoot a squirrel out.
Yep.
But I'm just getting at, you can have a lot of fun and a lot of impact on a really small property. And with Katie's penny pinching self, you can have a lot of management impact. If you got a little bit richer blood and want to do a little less work like I do, have a little bit bigger
list.
Always
looking for the easy way out, right?
But
so we each compiled a list. Again, my list comes out at around $1,000, and Matt's come out. What'd you say again?
$120,000.
So neither of us know what is on each other's list, but I said I'm going to try to guess what's on your list, and you're going to try to do the same. So this is my iteration of what I think you would choose if you had to pick eight things for habitat management.
So let's talk about where our mindset is, like property wise, size wise first. Okay. I think it's a big thing to, like, I've worked with the North Carolina Wildlife Commission. I worked there for about 4 years. So we managed a lot of acreage. So, and even here we manage a lot of acreage. So I think my mind is stuck in like the large scale management basis, like managing a lot of acreage. So that's where my mindset was at when I was creating my list.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, you know, I work with a lot of landowners who have that same acreage, but also I work with a lot of landowners that are some of the most passionate people about their land and they want to manage it, but you know, it's the cards they've been dealt and they may only have 10 acres or 15 acres, whatever. So, they're dedicated and they're passionate and they want to do it. And it doesn't make sense for them to have or to spend that much money on land management items. So those people, myself included at my house, you know, it doesn't warrant to go all in on those. They can have the same, results, maybe with just a little bit more sweat or a lot more sweat, for a lot less cost.
So you're looking at more of the like 20 acres less kind of range. I'm looking at the like 100 acre plus range.
Yes. But I mean, most things on my list you could still certainly use.
Oh, yeah.
On all the other properties.
And that's the thing. No matter, I mean, that's just like anybody that's ever done any kind of like mechanic work or wood shop work. You can never have enough tools in your back pocket.
Absolutely.
Or in your toolbox.
And that's something to think about, even because I imagine I'll know a few things on your list and I imagine you know a few things on my list. But in reality, if we did not have a budget, I'm sure we would each have all of these things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not either or. There's just certain things that make more sense depending on what kind of property you have.
Yeah, and how many different management practices you're going to be doing on your property. Like different, like if you only have 10 acres and you're doing prescribed burning, you may only burn every 3 years, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, but whereas if you have 200 acres, you could be burning every single year. You know, if you break it up right, you know, or you could be doing food plots and things like that.
But even, you know, regardless, if you're a landowner and I guess a broadcast seeder, you can have a shoulder seeder or an ATV seeder and be effective on either piece. It just depends on how much time you want to put on it. You know, you spending more money on those more expensive things can just decrease your time regardless of which.
Like size you can
property.
Do the same exact job with a drill as you can with a seeder. You're just going to be doing it in two different ways.
A seed drill. Ooh, was that on your list? I didn't. That,
no.
Okay, I was going to say that one didn't cross my mind to put on there.
No. But anyway.
But would you say before we come over, so before we walked over here to the podcast studio, I said, Matt, I have $1,000 that I have on my list here. And he said, would you say? You said, how are you starting a fire with matches?
Yeah. Actually, how are you starting fire with matches? Because fire is one of the number one management tools that we use.
Absolutely.
I think it's one of the most caught. And I was talking to somebody the other day that said prescribed fire was not cost effective.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
I guess it depends.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand why somebody would say that. Because depending on the size of the property that you were burning, you know, those costs can fluctuate a whole lot. Because if you, Matt, if you were a landowner that had 2 acres and you wanted us, the land trust, to come burn it, if we have to travel an hour and a half to get there and mobilize a lot of equipment and spend a lot of time, your cost per acre may be $300 an acre, whereas if you're a landowner that has 200 acres and you want it all burned, your cost per acre may only be $3 an acre. You know,
it's all different for all different situations.
Certainly. So he's already laughing at me. My guess at what your list is going to include, the first one is an item that you fuss at me every single day about that I wish I could go buy tomorrow, but I can't. So if anybody wants to make a donation to the land trust so we can have one internally, I will be forever grateful and I'll send you Christmas cards for the rest of your life. But that item is a dozer.
Yeah.
That's on your list.
Not on my list.
That's not on your list?
No.
So you're putting in fire breaks with a tractor and a disc. Is that right?
I don't know.
Come on.
You gotta guess my items.
All right.
The thing about it, and just to offer some rebuttal to it, The thing about a dozer is not everybody knows how to operate a dozer.
Sure, but why would you not have a dozer?
Why would I not have a dozer? Like, personally own a dozer? I mean, if it's on one property that I'm managing, all right, it's there at the property. I don't ever have to worry about moving it or anything, but dozers have a lot of maintenance and upkeep costs. So, over time, and dozers really only have, like, a one-time use.
I disagree with that.
I don't mean it as, like, a one-time, you're done with it, never going to use it again. Like, I know you would use it in the way we're talking about using a bulldozer is in primarily terms of fire breaks and land clearing.
And the reason you do that, just to, like, in case somebody doesn't understand the day-to-day of prescribed fire, to be able to burn, you have to have some kind of safe fire break that doesn't have to be something that's put in with a dozer, but a dozer's quick, easy, and gets down to bare mineral soil, and it's an extremely safe line, one of the safest fire breaks that you can burn off of.
And it's something that can be maintained over time a lot more efficiently.
But that's also true, just like you said, if you had a dozer up front, maybe your Santa's list should have had a dozer rental. If you have a dozer and you spend a lot of time and a lot of money up front to get really good fire breaks put in, you don't have much maintenance per se after
I mean,
that.
That's just kind of like, you know, how you've talked to me about doing a lot of the management on TRLT's land is, you know, once we get it there, it's there.
That's right.
And as long as you maintain it, it's always going to be there. So I feel like, you know, spending a little money up front to have somebody that's skilled, a skilled operator and can come out there and do it for you, you know, I think your money's going to be spent better that way, and you're never going to have $300,000 in fire breaks. Mm-hmm. Never.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where my mindset was on that one, from a private landowner's perspective.
I guess another reason dozer was automatically, and again, it's all to scale, but if you were like a landowner that had 800 acres plus, I just see the feasibility of it so much more, whether that's for road maintenance or if you had an area that was grown up, let's say in cedar trees, right? Like 40-year-old cedars, you can take a dozer through there, push them over, put them in a brush pile and burn it. And because that area has been forested for so long, you're likely not going to have a lot of noxious weed pressure. And that's, in all honesty, that's some of the most productive areas I've ever seen for quail, or in areas that were just cedar thickets. And you come in with a dozer, you push them off, and you have a great starting point to work with.
So I'll just give you a broad basis. I didn't put any sort of like major heavy equipment operation type equipment on my list.
Ooh.
Just because not everybody has the ability to run it. They may not feel comfortable in it. And quite honestly, I mean, like you said, it's $300,000 for anything like that. Like, if you're going to buy new, like, you can get used stuff cheaper, but you're still looking at spending a minimum $90,000-$100,000.
All right, so I missed the first one. I don't think you can get away without having the second one. The second one's just a tractor. I said a 60 horsepower plus tractor.
Yeah, so what I put on mine was a 85 horsepower tractor. One of my favorite tractors to operate is a John Deere 5085M. I think they may have discontinued them, but just that same like 60 to 80 horsepower tractor. It's just a good sized tractor that can, you know, handle some heavy implements, that can do some serious work. I feel like you're using the piece of equipment to do some heavy duty work. So, but I also specified with a front end loader. So there's your bulldozer.
Oh, so was a disc on your list?
A disc is on my list.
Okay. So there's your fire breaks.
Right.
What if you got a stump?
So if you got a stump, you're going to have to figure out some way around it.
No, you're going to have to figure it out, buddy. This is your list.
So, I mean, you can go around it. You can go around stumps. Do what you got to do, you know. Yeah. I mean, we've had, even with a dozer, you can't eat, unless you get into like some of the larger dozers, you're not really getting stumps up.
Agreed.
Like, you're looking at like a D6 size dozer before you're moving any large stump. So hopefully over time, it's just going to rot. I mean, you can try to do things to speed up the process, or you could pay somebody to come in and dig them up.
But in reality, you know, maybe that's switching gears a little bit, but I think it shows, and something that you and I have tried to do a lot is do better about where you're putting your fire breaks in the first place. Because if you're going to have to go in there and clear out a bunch of stumps, that's time intensive. That takes a lot of money. And if you can bump that out to like the edge of a field or a road, why not? You know,
you should use any natural fire break that you can that's going to be safe and effective. Like I know a lot of times, depending on conditions and what's going on, we'll even use creeks and stuff as fire breaks. You know, those aren't always the safest option. You can't, like you said, barrel mineral soil, dozer lines or disc lines are about as good as you can get. But there's times where even in those areas, if you have a dozer that it may be too wet or something, something that just limits you from even putting that in there. Like a big thing with us is easements. A lot of our clean water easements and DEQ easements, you know, they don't want any kind of disturbance. So we have to use all the natural features that we can to minimize the disturbance of the soil to protect water quality. Mm-hmm. So even in situations where you can get a dozer in there, you're not going to because it's more of a detriment than it is a benefit.
But even that, you know, again, it all depends. So a lot of our properties that we burn, we're not out there every day just because we have land scattered throughout the state. Mm-hmm. And I know you know which track I'm talking about. The listeners probably don't know it because it's not one in SAP. But we had intended to use the creek as a fire break there. Mm-hmm. And Matt and I went down there earlier in the year. We were doing some bush hogging, and there was not a lick of water in that creek, even though it was like normal.
Full of leaves, had down trees all the way across it and everything, and it's just not feasible.
So 2 years ago, that track had been burned off of that creek, and that creek worked excellent, but it was at full capacity then. Mm-hmm. When we looked at it, there is no way you could pay me to burn it just because it would never work. So, you know, I guess things just vary year to year. And
weather is one of the biggest components of prescribed burning.
Yeah.
I mean, not only from like
the day of, but
not just weather parameters the day of, like you were about to say, but just in all aspects. But anyway.
So,
next
on my list, now it's making me wonder if this is even on your list. I went a bobcat and a fecon.
Nope.
Gosh, man, I'm sucking it up. And here you are.
Just because there again, you could contract somebody out to do it the one or two times to get it back to that maintenance phase, it would be way cheaper and less upkeep in the long run.
I agree. But still, if I could have...
It's all about that maintenance phase. If you can get it to the maintenance phase where you can take care of it, you're fine.
So,
but it's when that stuff gets out of control where you need the big boy toys.
If you're... I'm not looking at your list. Based on what is on your list, if you currently, on your property that is imaginary... If you have an overgrown field, how are you handling it?
I'm calling a contractor.
But that wasn't part of the plan. You've done changed the game.
No, that's what I said I would do. Like, it depends. I mean, and then the other thing is I would probably...
If you...
Would you just get through the rest of the list? You'll get the rest of them.
All right. On to the next one. A sprayer. Sprayer was on my list.
A three-point sprayer is definitely on my list to go with my John Deere tractor.
Uh-huh, but it's not just...
It's not just a three-point sprayer. I don't care what brand it is, you know, didn't really put that much thought into it, but I would use a three-point boomless sprayer with a wand attachment, so with a hose reel. So that comes back in. So, and it's basically set up kind of like our Gator sprayer is, which I don't know if most folks know what boomless nozzles are, but one thing that we've been really struggling is trying to figure out how to maintain our roads from woody encroachment. So like, you know, if roads, the trees up, you can't bush hog, but so high. So eventually stuff starts to grow in, it starts to beat you.
It's like, it becomes a tunnel.
Yeah, pretty much.
If your trees aren't cleared wide enough out. So a lot of that could be solved if you had like, I don't know, how wide of a road would that be? 15 foot?
Minimum.
Yeah, 15 foot road that was cleared of trees. But just because of the cards we were dealt, a lot of our roads are a single bush hog width.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go through there and bush hog them all day, but we're getting slapped in the face. We're going to pull the canopy off the tractor. You know, it's just not a good scenario. So we spent a lot of time and effort finding the right piece of equipment, and I think we found it. And I'm pleased with it anyways.
But anyway, the sprayer would have three boomless nozzles on it, one on each side spraying 15 foot to the sides or more if you got really, really wide roads or really big fields that you want to spray with, and then a center sprayer. Having the ability to turn those fan tip nozzles up so you can spray vertically, I think is a really big benefit for doing herbicide pruning. I think we called it something else too. What was the
if you hadn't asked me that,
okay. Yeah, I know,
chemical pruning.
Yeah, chemical pruning. So that's not, I think they do it a lot on right-of-ways and things like that, like power lines and all. But that's just some way that we can maintain a lot of those roads in another way. But on the flip side, you know, if you had bought a boom sprayer, you wouldn't be able to use it for that, and you know, application.
A boom sprayer having like a single, oh, how do you explain this?
It has a bunch of nozzles on pieces of angle iron. It's yeah. pretty much, or angled steel is
it's
all
like,
it is.
It's like one long rod, for lack yeah. of better terms, behind your tractor that's a wide. Boom. Yeah. Or whatever, that's wide, so there you would not be able to drive it down a woods road without tearing it right. all to pieces.
But whereas the boomless option, you can also use it in a field application as well.
Yep.
I mean, you might waste a little more chemical from overspray.
And they're not as accurate, calibration-wise. Right.
But I think the ability to use it in more applications outweighs the negatives of it, I guess.
I agree. And I would, if I had to only choose between a boom sprayer and a boomless, I would choose a boomless all day.
All day long.
And that's something that's neat about the sprayer that we have, or one that you could purchase that has boomless nozzles. We can go through and turn off certain sets of nozzles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if there's an agriculture field on the left side, but we need to spray the road on the right side, we can turn off the left nozzle and only spray on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they're all electric, so we can turn the angle of the nozzles however we need them, so that way we're not putting a bunch of excess spray out there. And depending on the sprayer that you get or you have, that's not always an option.
And I mean, and you know, boom sprayers, they have those same capabilities, the electronic controls and all, but just the thing that's the most draw to me is like there's a whole lot less to tear up. I'm bad about tearing stuff up.
Yes, he is.
But it's just so much more tight and compact.
Yeah.
You know, you don't ever have to get out, you know, they got boom sprayers that's got hydraulic arms. You don't ever have to get out of the tractor anyway. But most lower end boom sprayers, you got to get out and mechanically let the arms down. You have the potential to get herbicide on you. Oh, that was another thing about my tractor. It's got a cab on it.
Oh, okay.
Because one thing I never liked was spraying herbicide in an open cab vehicle. I just feel like it adds more of a safety factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think we breathe in enough
you just want it for the
percentages and stuff, you know, trying to sound big word.
You just want it for the air conditioner. Don't lie.
That's right.
Don't try to wrap it up.
And come September and October when you bush hogging.
That's the truth.
Daggum yellow jackets. I've been run off a tractor several times by yellow jackets.
I was going to say yellow jackets and the temperature control would not be the draw for me for an enclosed cab tractor. The draw for me is if you ever have to bush hog, like on a dirt road or something like that,
just all the
dust will kill you. Like,
oh, yeah.
I remember, so we had to do a tree planting on a particular track, and our intent was to burn it ahead of time, but the burn didn't go as planned, and every square inch wasn't burned, I guess is a way to put it. So there were still areas. Or even if it was burned, it was a lot of blackberries, so they're still standing blackberries that were head tall. And we were having a volunteer day where all these volunteers are going to come out and do some planting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, there's no better way to make a bunch of volunteers hate me or the land trust than ask them to come plant in a blackberry thicket. So that, in turn, was me bush hogging these blackberry down so volunteers could have a nice walking experience as they were planting these longleaf. But because the track had been burned, man, I was just like blowing black soot all over me. So I remember I took a selfie after that, and it's like the Orbit commercials, like chewing gum, you know.
Yeah.
I look like a coal miner, but my teeth were still white. I was just totally covered in soot. But anyways.
Keep on rolling.
So sprayer, yep. Disc, we already said that one was on your list, right?
Mm-hmm.
any
hydraulic crosscut disc.
Oh, you're going hydraulic crosscut.
Yeah, just because they usually have a little bit more weight and they can kind of get down to the. I think they can cut through root matter and stuff a lot better.
I agree.
And especially if you've ever run a disc or anything, you know, 3-point discs, they're always bouncing you around. They bounce around a lot. They don't really get into the soil and turn it over good. So anytime you're discing a lot of grass or anything like that, it just takes so many passes. If you can just drop the disc, pull it through at one time, you know, you're wasting less fuel, wasting less time. Time is money, and a lot less wear and fatigue on you as well.
The only drawback to that is if you have to navigate some tight
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be a drawback. But yeah. Anywho.
But it is what it is.
So I feel like you didn't put this one on your list either. Now, I'd said a UTV or an ATV.
Did not put that on my list.
Okay, man, I'm just... cedar?
If you get all this other stuff, and you got 100 acres, 200 acres, you already have one of those more than likely.
Well, you never know. I didn't know how precise you're getting. I put a cedar. Do you have some kind of broadcast cedar?
I did not put a cedar.
Oh, gosh.
Because I don't feel like necessarily planting is necessary all the time.
Oh, I like to hear you say that. I agree. But
it does have its... yes. It does have its benefits.
Right. And in all honesty, if you were going to make the cream of the crop property,
you don't need to plant a thing.
No, I was going to say you should be planting something.
I was going to say you shouldn't, but
we'll agree.
That's where you be rubbing off on me, baby.
We will agree to disagree.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break from the show to talk about one of our sponsors, Backcountry and Beyond. You can visit Backcountry and Beyond at 322 South Main Street in Salisbury, North Carolina. They've got a lot of awesome things right now. They've got a new restock of the Meat Church seasonings. They've got their Traeger grills that everybody knows and loves. And if you get your grill from Backcountry and Beyond, they have a free setup, assembly, and delivery to Salisbury, North Carolina, and the surrounding areas. So you can get hooked up with a nice grill and you can get those seasonings while you're there too. Also, they've got that new Nordic collection from Yeti. It's highly sought after and they've got it in stock. So be sure to pop on down there and get all of your outdoor needs, or if you can't make it down to Salisbury, you can shop online at www.backcountryandbeyond.com. The team at Montgomery Community College in Troy invite you to get to know their taxidermy program. For decades, MCC has been helping taxidermy enthusiasts explore their industry as either a hobby or an exciting career option. Students of all ages and abilities can participate in day or evening classes and explore this craft in either mammal or fowl classes. Past projects include deer, beaver, fox, coyote, wolf, swan, duck, turkey, and more. Taxidermy is considered one of MCC's heritage crafts programs. Other specialty programs include gunsmithing, hunting and shooting sport management, forest management technology, and pottery. Visit montgomery.edu to see course descriptions and explore the exciting world of taxidermy for yourself.
A bush hog?
I did say a bush hog.
Yeah, that one's
so kind of... one of the big thing about all of these things that are on my list, they're not just for creating habitat. They're all on a large property. One of the biggest things, and me and you have dealt with it a lot, is access to the property. So being able to actually get somewhere on the property to do something. Like, there's no use in going in there and doing something, or you're not going to be able to go in there and do it if you don't have access to it.
Yeah, and that can make, I mean, I think that can make or break a property, not only in terms of hunting, but in terms of you managing it. If you can't get there, like, man, what are you doing? Or if it takes you so long to get to somewhere, and you're tearing all your equipment up getting there, that's not good.
It just comes to the point where it's not even worth it. To me.
Chainsaw?
I did put a chainsaw on there.
Okay.
And the chainsaw I put on here, I really like steel products. Husqvarna makes some good chainsaws too, but just from my experiences, definitely if you're going to be doing a lot of sawing, I would definitely lean towards the commercial grades of any saw.
I agree.
Because the cheap consumer grades aren't worth a dang. But I said a steel MS-362 chainsaw with a 25-inch bar.
25-inch bar?
Yeah.
Good grief.
The 25-inch bar versus the 20-inch bar was only 10 bucks more, so.
So not only does Matt not want to get sweaty while he's on the tractor, he also doesn't want to bend over when he has to buck up something on the ground.
That's right. That's right. But and that was about, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy what even like hand tools and stuff like.
I agree.
I don't know that. I mean, it is a hand tool, but it's a gas powered tool.
I'd call it a hand tool.
But I mean, one of them suckers is almost $1,000.
Yep.
For a good one, you know. But definitely cry once, buy once. But so yeah, that was one of them.
I had out of your eight, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 out of 8. That's not too bad, huh?
Yeah.
So
even though I told you most of them, asking you all these things.
No, you didn't.
But. So,
which ones did I miss then?
So on there, also kind of going along with the, you know, road maintenance, kind of maintaining access to traverse your properties and manage them would be a box scrape.
Okay.
Paired with the front end loader, you know, you could move gravel or you know, kind of regrade some of your roads. The other one was a drip torch,
mm-hmm.
but that's just putting fire on the ground.
But that'd be a necessity.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you got all the stuff, you got your fire breaks in. Once you put some good fire breaks in that are safe, light it up.
I mean, 100%. There's nothing in the world that makes me more comfortable burning than good fire breaks. Yep.
I think that was all of them.
I thought there was one more. Well, so give me the prices for each of those that you come up with.
So, from what I've seen, I couldn't really, you know how hard, if you've ever looked at tractors and dreamed, you know how hard it is to find prices on them.
Just around
without calling and getting a quote. But
we didn't go to that extent.
But I would say you'd probably be in the price range of about $80,000 to $90,000 for a good mid-sized tractor. The hydraulic disc, you're looking probably anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 range for a good one.
Or a regular disc you could get for... $5,000.
Probably a 3-point disc. You probably get one for about $5,000. I mean, how much did you pay for our Athens one? You know,
it was a little more than $5,000 because the intent with that one was because we do have to navigate tight areas. I definitely wanted a 3-point disc, but I wanted it to be as heavy as it possibly could. So I got it with scrapers and everything too.
I think something really important that you did on that is like think about your application and what you're going to be using it for, and put a lot of time and thought into what you're buying, because hopefully once you buy it, you have it forever.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, although a disc will require maintenance, it doesn't ever really go bad. Mm-hmm. So you invest in it, and as long as you keep it in good shape, you have it forever. And that's exactly what I did with that one. I wanted to put in as much research, because the last thing I wanted to do would be spend $3,000 on a disc and it not do what we needed it to do. You know, it'd be crazy, so...
And then the thing with the 3-point sprayer, making sure it has like the detachable, you know, hand nozzle. You can all, you know, that goes back to having a way to carry 100 gallons of water around a fire break. So you don't have to have that UTV or ATV to haul that water around. Just to have kind of a safety net doing prescribed burning. You got the drip torch. That one's pretty obvious. Putting fire on the ground. Chainsaw. The idea is buy a good one that, you know, if you buy something good enough,
you're supposed to be giving me prices.
Oh,
you already told me tractor.
3-point sprayer, looking at about $5,000. I said the disc was about anywhere from, I said it was $12,000. You got the rotary mower, a 10-foot 3-point mower, you're looking at about $8,000. If you get on up into a pull behind 15-foot bat wing, but you got to have some really big roads to be mowing for that. But it comes in really handy when you're mowing large fields. You're looking at about $15,000 to $20,000 for them.
That's something I don't think folks realize is how long it can take to bush hog something. Like, you know,
a 5-foot mower.
A field might look small until you start driving over that sucker in 5-foot swaths, and it gets big quick, and it takes so much time.
Yeah, it does.
Which is why I'd rather burn it any day.
Drip torches are about $200. The chainsaw there again. Oh, the other one you missed was a blower.
Yeah, see, I asked you about that. Yeah.
The blower I said was a steel BR-800.
So, what are you using a blower for?
Putting in hand lines.
Okay.
You can put in hand lines. You can put in for prescribed fire where those stumps are that you can't disc over. Anytime you're using those natural fire breaks to tie into creeks, things like that, or you can just put in a whole fire break with it in a place you can't get a tractor.
Okay.
But shoot, them things are about $700 too. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy what stuff costs now. And then the box scrape was about $2,000.
Okay. All right. So you heard from Mr. Moneybags over there and what he would do. So now it comes for Penny Pinch and Kate's list over here.
Yeah, and I'm probably not going to get none of them, but first one on my list was a drip torch.
That was on my list.
I feel like that should be, you know, in everybody's tool bag.
Yep, and I don't know if you know this. You may already know this.
What was the, you had one of the little bottle drip torches.
Oh, that's not where I thought you were going. I do have one. So, a regular drip torch is pretty big. It can hold like 2 gallons.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get away with a very small, and I don't even know the brand of it. But if you've ever...
I think it's Forestry Suppliers drip torch, ain't it?
No, Forestry Suppliers is the dealer, the supplier. Oh, but that's okay. Not the brand of the actual doohickey. But anyway, it's a very small, if you've ever seen, it's not much bigger than the size of a water bottle, but it's metal, you can carry fuel in it, and it's just got like, it's the same end as a drip torch, but smaller.
Yeah.
So that could be one that was even cheaper.
And I think you told me it's mainly for like fort or wildland firefighters to carry in their pack.
We would take them if we were like in somewhere that was really remote. So I guess to back it all up, in the world of wildland fire, there are standard things that you keep in your pack.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those safety items that you keep in your pack is a way to burn. And you might be thinking, well, you're on a wildfire. Why are you trying to light something mm-hmm. else? But you may need to light a backfire to allow you to have a safety zone or something mm-hmm. like that. So some folks will use fusees, which are like, you know, like
basically a road flare.
Yeah, like if you're broke down on the side of the road, that.
That's on your list.
That is not on my
That's
list.
That's how Katie's running around. Katie's
road
running
flares.
Around lighting the woods up with road flares.
But you can do it, and you can do it very
oh,
well.
Yeah.
But for folks that didn't want to carry road flares, fusees, whatever, because you'd usually take like 5 of them, you can take that little bottle with you.
Hmm.
And, you know, that just because if you're hiking in 10 miles, you don't want to lug in a drip torch because you're already lugging in a hand tool.
I just see that one as being like a good one for like a landowner to have that, you know, wants to burn their leaves off in their yard and have a safe way to put fire instead of dumping 10 gallons of diesel fuel in it and blowing up, you know.
Some folks will use a regular propane torch.
Yeah, I've seen those too, and I've thought that when I said the little bottle, but...
So I've slowly transformed my husband into a habitat manager. Whether he knows exactly why he's doing these things or not, that's another story, and it doesn't matter to me. But if you know much about me, one, I like to burn. But two, there's nothing that makes me happier than a summer burn. Like, just because you get a totally different plant vegetation effects. And it's a time that's often very, very difficult to get a burn in because mm-hmm. the weather conditions are not very conducive to burning. But there's often these rare days that you might get in the summer that you can pull one off. And it was one time this past summer, and I don't remember if I texted him or what, and I was like, man, we should be burning at our house right now. We need to be burning at our house. And I remember I come home. And he was out there with a propane torch burning these little sections, these little burn blocks at our house. I'm like, man, I love you, and I'm very proud of you. Thank you for that. So it can be done with a regular old propane torch. Yeah.
Which is a lot of landowners use those.
Yeah.
But next thing on there was a steel rake.
A steel rake? What do you mean? Just like a leaf rake?
No, like, you know, they're used a lot for moving gravel around.
Oh.
Kind of like a...
Not steel like the brand, steel
no,
like the metal material.
Like, yeah. They usually have a bunch of little teeth on them. I don't know. But
no, that was not on my list.
Just because...
What do you think I'm doing, landscaping?
Just because, well, I mean, a lot of land management is just landscaping, but if you didn't have a specific fire rake, it could also be used to do a lot of raking, and you could potentially do the same thing with it that you could a leaf blower.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's probably something you already have around your house anyway,
mm-hmm.
if it's not a regular leaf rake.
Yeah.
So that one went on there.
And I just want to hit on drip torches real quick again. So
you really like drip torches.
I do, and I think people should know this. There are two, I guess, main brands or styles of drip torches. And this only matters to you if you're really nerdy like me. And
you're far from nerdy.
And whatever. So there is a brand called Panama. And there's a brand called, I think it's Sure Seal. And 90% of the drip torches that folks use around here are Sure Seal drip torches. And the only difference in reality is the tip on the drip torches. The Panama drip torches have like a big,
It looks like a palm leaf, don't it, sort of?
No, it's like a big square. Why are you saying that? Just because I'm holding my hand out?
I don't know.
it's a big square, but, you know, if you're burning with a regular drip torch, you turn your drip torch upside down and it drips fuel out.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, I mean, it lands on the ground. That's what happens. But these Panama style drip torches, you turn them upside down and this, it's kind of like an extra wick there.
Hmm.
It catches your fuel and it keeps your drip torch burning longer and better than just a regular drip torch. But they're more expensive, and I wrote the prices down for both of those. A Panama is like $350, where you can get a regular Sure Seal drip torch for $170.
What's the reason for the more expensive one? You said it burns better, or?
Yeah, that end on it captures the fuel and it burns better, but in reality, like, unless you're just wanting the newest, coolest, fancy thing, you wouldn't go buy one for any other application. It's just a difference in brand there. I just think it's neat that there's other stuff out there that folks don't use around here. In Tennessee, that's all we would use.
Really?
And there are particular people who will go unnamed that I would burn with that would only burn with those, and he never wanted to use a regular drip torch.
Mm-hmm. So the next thing on my list, and this doesn't have to be this specific one, but like a backpack sprayer or pump up type sprayer.
That was 100% on my list. Yep. That. And so a 4 gallon Solo is the brand,
mm-hmm.
a 4 gallon Solo backpack sprayer, or a Steel also has a newer backpack sprayer that I've seen a lot of herbicide crews start to use, and they have an extra pressurized tank on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a regular backpack, sprayer that you're using, you're pumping that up constantly with, you know, you might be spraying with your left hand, pumping it up constantly with your right hand. But those new Steel, disclaimer, I've never used them. I've just seen a lot of herbicide crews start to use them.
They rust up a lot, but they're good.
No, they don't.
I've used them before. They rust up a lot.
The
pressurized tanks and all, they have a lot of metal components and stuff.
Are you talking about the ones with the extra, it's got mm-hmm. like a whole nother pressure cylinder over there?
Mm-hmm. They work really, really well, but you have to take really, really good care of them, keep them oiled up, and because herbicide is very, very corrosive.
Absolutely. You should. So that here's your hot tip for the day. Never, ever, ever use herbicide sprayers and not clean them out.
Yeah,
that
sure.
should be, at the end of the day, you should be rinsing your sprayer out at least 3 times.
Or you're going to regret it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
The next one was loppers.
Loppers? No, what am I going to do with loppers?
Cut some limbs or something.
No, I got something else on my list that'll take care of that.
Squirt bottles.
That was certainly on my list.
Katie loves doing her hack and squirt methods.
Yes, she does. Mm. You can transform a property with a spray bottle and some herbicide. Mm. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong.
Okay.
You're not wrong.
So I'm going to go to Lowe's.
You can create a bunch of Widowmakers too, though.
You can do that. And you can create a headache the next time you burn. But you can go to Lowe's, get you a Zepps little, like, professional-grade sprayer for less than $5, and you can have profound impacts on your land.
Next one was a sling blade.
That was not on my list.
So, we were trying to figure out the name of this tool. And
you've done taking me back to the 1940s, buddy.
So, we didn't know the exact name of this tool, but my dad had had some when I was a kid, and they always hung on the wall. We never used them. They kind of, weed eaters kind of took their place, but a sling blade, bushwhacker, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of like a thing if you ever watched Cool Hand Luke or something like that. You know, they'd be in the ditches swinging the blades, but just kind of like as a manual bush hog kind of deal, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thoughts there.
Nope, not on my list.
Machete/hatchet.
Well, that was not on my list, but it was kind of like on a honorable mentions part of my list. Like, if somebody didn't want to use a chainsaw, they could do the same kind of forest stand improvement work with a hatchet. So, and I know some people prefer to use a hatchet because they say they can move quicker and it's not as loud and or as dangerous as a chainsaw. So, honorable mention, but not on my list.
Did you put some kind of cheap chainsaw on your
list?
I did.
I absolutely did. So I kind of went through a list of, if I was going to spend more money, a 362, a steel MS-362 was also on my list. But an MS-180, you can go buy it for $240. It's only 9 pounds, you know, so you can move around with it. And I also kind of had another subset in my list of, if somebody was to give me a bunch of money and just said, here, Katie, go spend this, I would buy an electric chainsaw just to see how it works. I've never used one. But those electric chainsaws are 6 pounds. So if you're talking about fatigue, if I'm out there doing timber stand improvement, and a steel MS-362 weighs 13 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But that electric chainsaw weighs 6 pounds. So theoretically, your fatigue is just cut way down.
And aggravation is severely increased.
When you run out of battery juice.
I will say, though, a buddy of mine, he had a tree fall down this past weekend. He didn't have a chainsaw, but he had like one of those
saws?
No, it was an electric pole saw.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they work phenomenal. Like, if you ever use like the manual pole saws, terrible. But this thing, like, he was cutting like 6-inch limbs off of this tree to like try to break it down. I mean, he got it down almost to like the main trunk of the tree, the whole thing.
The only reason, now I'm trying to think in my head what you cats look like out there cutting a tree with a pole saw. But I put this electric chainsaw in there to be, have, you know, for my list to be a little progressive, right? Because I've always been against electric things, because if I'm way back in the woods, the last thing I want is to have to go inside and charge a battery. Because I looked it up. Those steel chainsaws, they will run for 40 minutes, but it takes 180 minutes to charge them. Or 55 minutes if you buy the fast charger.
40 minutes of chainsawing, though, that's
not
a good bit of
what you think I
chainsawing.
Said? No.
If you do it chainsawing, cutting trees, 40 solid minutes.
But timber stand
improvement. For the normal person.
If you're doing timber stand improvement, that's no time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just getting, that's my aerobic, that's me stretching.
Well, but
to
that's
get
not
started.
Cutting down full trees. That's just going in and cutting and
around.
Girdling trees.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's completely different.
All right. Anyways.
All right. So, what's actually on your list?
Did you already give me all your guesses?
Oh, the last one. I was going to say herbicide, but chainsaw. I figured that one was on there.
Okay. So my list, number one was a chainsaw. And these are in no particular order. A chainsaw was on my list. Backpack sprayer, which you got. I would do a stocking stuffer herbicide. Okay.
A stocking stuffer herbicide?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like a... Like, you know,
like some little airplane bottles of herbicide.
Not like that, but I'm just saying I would buy a spray bottle for one, $2 spray bottle, and then I would get just a little cocktail, not mixed up, just a separate cocktail, whatever, single serve. I would have glyphosate, because glyphosate is a broad spectrum herbicide that's going to kill everything. I would have Garlon, which is triclopyr. I would have that herbicide, and I had like four more listed, but I would also get Plateau, and we probably don't have time to go through those, but I would
have been right by saying herbicide.
You would have been right. In my opinion, there is no way that you can do good habitat management without reliance on herbicide, whether you're managing 1,000 acres or you're managing 4 acres. Mm-hmm. I think herbicide, regardless of how you feel about herbicides, I think herbicides have to be on that list if you are trying to be an effective manager.
Mm-hmm.
So a hodgepodge of those would be on there. A leaf blower was on my list. Ideally, I would, if I was going to go buy a leaf blower, I would buy a BR-700 or 800.
See, we essentially had the same I just went for the good ones that's going to last for a while, and you're going for the ones you can use them for maybe 1 year and they're done.
But I think you could have a handheld leaf blower and use it just fine for 10 years, putting in little fire breaks. I don't see any issue with that. And
I mean, we've got a little electric cobalt one that we use to keep our driveway blowed off. And, you know, I have a lot of oak trees around our house. And yard just gets deep in oak tree leaves and hickory leaves and all. And Alexis, my wife, she would go out there every day and blow till the battery died. And I come home one day, I was like, who's been blowing my leaves? Like, the wind done blowed them all off or something. But then, so she did that for about a week and never accomplished the job, though.
Uh-huh.
Whereas went back out there the next day with my backpack blower and blowed the whole yard off in one afternoon.
So this is kind of a little side story, but with a land trust, we have two backpack blowers,
mm-hmm.
a BR-800, and is the other one a 650 or a 700?
I think it's a 650 or 600 or something like that.
Okay, so how fast, what kind of air velocity, miles per hour, do you think that BR-800 is moving?
Well, my little Cobalt one says 120, so probably about at least 600.
No, it ain't that much. No, it's 239. So, a couple of weeks ago was the first time that I've used our BR-800. I'd been using the BR-650 for a while. Man, I put that sucker on, and I about started levitating. This was not good. I'm pretty sure I immediately texted Matt and was like, this is ripping my arm off. So I had to do a little bit of engineering to make it user-friendly.
What'd you say you did?
They don't need to know this.
You took a ratchet strap and strapped it to yourself or something?
That's exactly what I did. So that BR-800 would blow so hard that anytime I would point it at the ground, it would blow my arm like off the path. Like it would physically move my arm to where I was not intending to blow. So I had to do a little engineering. I took the ratchet strap, wrapped it around the actual like leaf blowing arm and ratchet strapped it to my side. So that way it was no longer doing that.
I wish I wasn't sick and could have seen it.
Well, I'm sure you will before long, buddy. But that's what you call engineering and finding problem solving.
What else you got on your Christmas list?
Drip torch was on my list, obviously. A broadcast cedar was on my list.
Meaning one of the ones you hang off your arm in a bag.
An Earthway cedar, a Statesman cedar. You can get those for about $65.
Dang, they that much?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy what everything costs now, though, you know what?
Yep. And here's another pro tip for you. If you ever spread fertilizer in one of those, clean those out too. Otherwise, that sucker's going to get rusted all to pieces, yeah. And you're out $65.
Another highly corrosive.
Exactly. This one was on my list, but you don't really need it per se. You could make do. I was going to say a shovel for like $20 to do soil samples with, because if you were trying to do any kind of food plot, you should be doing soil samples.
So you're telling me you're going to put out all the fertilizer required for those soil samples.
Buddy, I've done it.
I'd be saying, fertilizer man, come over here with a fertilizer truck and spread it for me.
You think I'm kidding? On a yearly basis, I would say that I have routinely planted close to 25 acres with only a shoulder seeder. And that... it is awful, and it is not fun, but it can be done.
It just shows you, though, that where there is a will, there is a way.
That's right. So. And this last one, it might put me over that price point a little bit, but I would go buy, he's already laughing at me, I would get on Facebook Marketplace, and I would type in Honda Recon, a Honda Recon 250, and I would find me a four-wheeler. It's just a little two-wheel drive four-wheeler. For $800, and I would get an electric 15-gallon pump for it. So
right there, though, you just put yourself at $1,000 all day long.
See, but that's the number nine, like, wish list. Like, if I was an extra good girl for Christmas and Santa gave me a bonus.
And that one you can get on Facebook Marketplace ain't got no fender wheels, no seats. It might run.
Hey, I've got a pillow. I'll put that sucker on there. I don't care.
Probably missing the air box and the air cleaner on it.
It's a Honda, buddy. We good. We are good.
Hey, in all seriousness, though, Honda Recons, I used to have one growing up, and my dad had got a Foreman. And I like the Recon so much better than the Foreman.
Really?
Just because the smaller wheelbase of it and everything, you don't have to have a trail. You can
That's
go wherever.
True. If I, you know? If I was, my answer may change in 40 years, but I want to say if you were ever to ask me to go buy a new four-wheeler, or even a used one, I'm not going to buy anything other than a Honda. The reliability.
You ain't gonna buy a four wheeler anyway, because you're gonna be buying a dirt bike.
The reliability is there. I'm talking about for land management.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If I was gonna buy a four wheeler,
hey, you can slap a 15-gallon sprayer on a dirt bike. I'm sure you can figure some way out and do it.
No, that backpack sprayer.
They're going to start coming out with them now that we done talked about it.
Yeah, probably not. I did have an honorable mention on my list, and another honorable mention, that regardless of what you're doing, this should take the place of one of those things on that list if you could only buy 8 things. And that's PPE, protective equipment.
Yeah.
Whether that's chainsaw chaps, hearing protection. I know it was beat into you because you worked with the state. It was beat into me at all my like first jobs, and now it's a routine way of life for me. Like I do not get on a tractor without putting hearing protection in. I do not like to run a chainsaw at all, and will likely not do it without chaps on. And
safety glasses is my big one.
Safety glasses too.
Like while I was chainsawing this weekend, I took just a second and left my safety glasses on top of my hat because I took them off to talk to somebody inside. Come back out, went to sawing, and as soon as I sunk it in the woods, slung sawdust all in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I have to go to the eye doctor for more than anything for foreign debris in my eyes.
Foreign debris, look at you.
Yeah. Trying to sound smart.
Yeah. But that would be one that regardless of what you're doing at your house, even if you're only landscaping your yard, just do it. Just put in some earplugs.
You ain't getting it back.
That's right. And then you'll be like our executive director who can't hear anything, you know. You gotta protect those ears and protect those other body parts there. So that's my list.
I'd say we got some pretty different lists, but I think they both could accomplish the same thing, just on totally different scales. And I think that there shouldn't be anybody that says, I don't have enough money to do land management.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like I said earlier, I think if there's a will, there's a way that you can do it, and just making it work.
You know what ties these lists together? Like the thing that's in common in both of these?
What's that?
A passionate landowner.
Yep.
Because my list doesn't matter. Your list doesn't matter. You know, like I said, the money is relative because you can do it either way, but the thing that ties it together is a passionate landowner. And if you're a landowner out there, regardless of acres, and you're wanting to do something, you're wanting to have an impact, if you look at any species report, there are so many sensitive species that are declining every single day. It all starts with somebody doing something. So whether you have land or not, you can have an impact. If you need help trying to figure those things out, give us a call, shoot us an email, whatever.
The tightwad herself will help you.
I will be glad to.
You know, that'd be a kind of another cool thing to talk about sometime, is talk about things around the house that you can use for land management.
Mm-hmm.
Or a cool video or something. Go to somebody's house and be like, this can be used for this.
Yeah. I feel like my husband will be good at that one. Old MacGyver. But we appreciate y'all listening. Let us know what you thought about this. We just kind of had an impromptu idea today and threw this together. So if you liked it, let us know. If you didn't like it, let us know. And if you do like it, hopefully we can get back in here and try to keep the trend rolling.
Yeah.
But hope you have a great rest of your week. And until next time,
Happy New Year.
See y'all.
If you like the show and would like the episodes to keep coming, you should know that our podcast is just one of the tools that we use at Three Rivers Land Trust to further our conservation mission. Our number one priority and purpose is to conserve land and natural resources for future generations and to be a voice for wildlife and to ensure wildlife populations have habitat forever here in North Carolina. This podcast is just a byproduct to further that mission. You can visit our website at trlt.org to join us in this conservation mission.